everybody. Welcome to episode 419 of Good Luck High Five.
That's right. You're listening to a podcast that's for you if you play Magic the Gathering, whether you're sitting at home jamming some arena or you're sitting on your couch with your phone in your hand playing it on your Android device.
In which case, I'm Maria, one of your hosts, by the way. I am so jealous of you.
In which case, I am Megan, one of your hosts. I'm only Megan if you're playing this on Android right now.
wait. This podcast on Android or
playing Arena on Android, I am Megan.
What if you're not?
If you are not playing Arena on Android, you can call me Billy Joel.
Wow, Billy Joel's here, the piano man himself.
That's right.
Can I make a request?
Oh, sure.
I want to hear the song, like the industrial song where, what's it called? Allentown. That's what I want to hear.
Oh, you, okay. I'll
play That's it. My favorite Billy Joel song.
I'll play it for you later when I sit down at my piano.
All right, fine. I might be the only person who would ever say that is their favorite Billy Joel song.
Allentown.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yes.
On today's episode, which, by the way, is happening on February 1st.
Yeah. Happy February.
Do you know what that means, Megan?
Tomorrow is Groundhog's Day.
That's accurate. But you know what else it means?
What does it mean?
It's time to flip the month on our Magic Player Swimsuit Calendar.
Yes. Who's next?
All right. So here we go for February. None other than Gabe Nassif. Looking good, buddy. I decided to surprise Megan with this on the show today.
Yep, you really did.
You know what? I have to say, I like his pose. If you're listening to this, I'm sorry, you're missing a half of the joy here. But he is holding out his hand like he's going to shake your hand before a round.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
You're going to go to time and Gabe's going to win anyway.
Well, there you go.
Available on Etsy for $10. Donations, whatever, goes to Trevor Project.
Yes.
Anyway, great cause.
You can pick one up if you too would like to turn from January to February and see Gabe Nassif.
On this week's episode, we are talking about Kaldheim Limited.
That's right. I cannot stop playing Kaldheim Limited.
It is very addictive.
And so we are going to talk all about it, what cards we think are overperforming, what cards we think are underperforming, and spoiler alert, Maria and I have some hot differences of opinion on this.
Yeah, and I think this is really, I think a lot of people will be experiencing this in your own play groups, amongst your own friends, whatever, because Kaldheim, we said it on the episode last week with Judge Rob, check it out if you haven't, by the way, that Kaldheim has the most rules text of any set ever in the history of Magic the Gathering.
But before we get started, we have people to thank. First and foremost amongst them are our patrons. Thank you so much if you are a patron of the show. Shout out to Shane and to Patrick, who have become patrons since the last episode. Actually, Patrick was a little bit farther back and I missed them. So sorry about that.
But sorry, Patrick.
Thank you both so much for becoming patrons. It means the world to us. It truly does. Any dollar amount that you can chip in puts us that much closer to being not worried all the time.
What a way to put it, but it is accurate.
It's just how I feel constantly. So there you go.
Patreon.com/GLHFMagic is the link to go to do it. Takes a couple of minutes. If you get anything out of the show at all, any week you listen, if you're like, oh, look at this. Every time you refresh your podcast feed, you're like, there's Good Luck High Five. That puts a spring in my step. That's a good sign that maybe you should become a patron and support the things you care about. For as little as $1 a month gets you in as a patron. $5 gets you in at squirrel level, access to the Discord, all of that good stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of springs in your step.
Yes.
The thing that puts a spring in my step is Card Kingdom.
The thing that puts a spring in my step is my Air Jordans and Card Kingdom.
Yes, but Maria, unfortunately, Air Jordans are not sponsor of the show.
Ah, well.
Wow, do I wish they were.
I've never actually had a pair, but you remember back in the day, like you pressed the tongue and it like pumped up and like pushed air into it?
Obviously, I remember that. It was like an iconic part of Air Jordans.
Do you think that like that actually did anything?
Yeah. You don't
the
think
science of Air Jordans.
Nike wouldn't go around with a placebo effect pump tongue.
I don't know. A placebo effect pump tongue. You're only going to hear that on one podcast, and that's this one. Thank you, Card Kingdom, for sponsoring a podcast that would say such a phrase in a show about Magic the Gathering. For all of your awesome magical needs, Card Kingdom is there. Get your box of call time. Get yourself some pre-release packs. Open them up. Play them on spell table with your friends. Or you can also just open them, crack them, build them in Arena if you've got the rares, and then battle digitally on Arena. That's another way you can play. Yeah, absolutely. Super good time. Go to cardkingdom.com/GLHF. That's the affiliate link to use if you want them to know that we sent you very fast shipping, awesome articles, really cool stuff for beginners. They're like their battle decks, all that kind of stuff. And all the call time stuff, your little metal heart desires. If you're a robot listening to this, I meant you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Kaldheim Limited.
Wow, Maria. I cannot stop playing.
I mean, I think I've done more drafts of Kaldheim than I have any new set.
Yeah.
When it's come out.
Oh, I don't know, because I do love drafting, and I did draft a lot of Zendikar, but I think I've maybe drafted more back-to-back-to-back Kaldheims.
Yeah, like more right up here at the top of the brand new format.
Like, I end a draft, and then I just immediately get to a new one.
Yeah, normally when we do our first episode after a new set comes out, we're talking about our sealed deck and what we did at the pre-release, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
This time around, I think we're going to focus more on draft just because fewer people are having that in-store in-person pre-release experience.
And maybe you've done a little sealed.
I did once. On Arena.
I also did once.
Yeah.
And you know what? It was fun, but I don't remember anything about it because it draft so long memories ago. Have piled on top of it.
There's just been way too much draft
happening. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I think the big takeaways, let's talk about overall concepts for Kaldheim draft. For me, the biggest takeaway was one that I discovered after I had been, we'd streamed the pre-release, whatever you want to call it, early access streamer event on Wednesday. And I was at home and I'm like, why did that feel so weird to me? And the answer was because I couldn't fully get a grip on the format when I was streaming it for the first time. Normally I feel pretty okay, even though it is a new format, you know, you're still going to do stuff wrong. That stream I did way more wrong than I normally do. And I felt kind of like a little bit down about it. I'm like, oh, I made so many mistakes. And then I was like, well, it's because this set is literally the most complicated Magic set that we've got aside from a Master set or whatever that they printed.
Yeah.
And you're going to have those kind of moments too. It's a very complicated set. There's a lot of rules text. I still miss things when I'm playing, and I'm a sloppy player. I admit it. If you watch me stream, you know that's true.
Yeah.
But like, this is like above and beyond the sloppiness.
I feel like I've had the opposite reaction to Kaldheim because for me, I think having so much going on has like dialed me into it.
Oh, so
it
you're
more.
Just like laser.
Exactly. And for all of like the amount of rules text on it, I feel like, right, you can talk about the amount of text on cards, but I still think that for the most part, they boil down really easy. Like they boil down in such a nice way that you don't have to remember all of the text on a card. I don't know. I know that sounds weird.
No, I know what you're saying.
I'm thinking of like Glimpse the Cosmos.
Sure.
Which is a card that, right, you just like look at the top three, put one in your hand, put the rest on the bottom of your library.
Yep.
And it says that if you have a giant, then you can cast it once from your graveyard for a single blue, and then it goes into exile.
Giant flashback.
And it takes a ton of text to get there, right? But at the bottom of all of that text is like a very simple core concept, which is, hey, I'm going to be able to use this again if I have a giant.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, I guess for me, as much as it does have a lot of text. Once I've played it a couple of times, like Glimpse of Cosmos, I don't have to think about that card. I see it in the draft and I'm like, do I have giants and I want this card? Or do I not have any giants and I'm like, it's medium irrelevant. On it and I'm going to see if there's something better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just, I've just never felt like this at the start of a set before.
Yeah. And we were talking about this earlier where I feel like usually I tank the beginning of a draft format.
Yeah.
And I just mean like I will sell. Like there were times in Ikoria and I think in Zendikar too that I literally O3'd.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
Just bombed hard. And this one, I think that of the drafts that I've done, I have more often than not reached 7 wins.
Unbelievable, because I'm having the exact opposite experience. Normally at the beginning of a format, I'm crushing because I have all this magic you know, whatever back knowledge from all of these other sets was applicable. And so if you're a more experienced player, when you start off playing a set, you'll probably do better than most people who are just newer to the game because you have those core concepts, right? Well, this time around, no, those core concepts are not helping me at all. I have not reached 7 wins. I have not reached a 3-0. I have played both traditional and premium draft?
No, premium draft is, you're thinking traditional draft.
What's the best of one called?
Premium.
Premium, yeah. So I played both premium and traditional. I was like, well, let's try them both. See if that's some kind of magic that I'm not paying attention to. No good. 2-1, 2-1, 2-1, 4-3, 4-3, 4-3, 5-4, whatever. Never, ever any better. I had maybe one deck that I talked to Megan about that I thought could have gotten there, which was a blue-white deck with Nico in it.
Ooh.
It was very cool. Nice. But all of the rest of my decks felt like there was no hope of reaching any of those number of wins. And I tried everything. I tried aggro. I tried control. I tried 5-color garbage pile.
Oh, yeah. 5-color garbage pile. Yeah.
And I'm just I'm like, what is happening here? I feel I'm not alone in this. So, because I feel a lot of people are having this reaction. One I know is Marshall Sutcliffe, who I talked to about this on his stream. I'm like, Marshall, what's happening? He's like, yes, this feels like a cube. That's what he said.
Okay.
Feels like a cube. And I kind of have that feeling too. I literally open a draft and now I'm so confused that I'm like, I thought I knew what the world was about, but I don't know what I'm supposed to pick.
I feel like, oh man, I don't know. I feel like kind of like cube. I mean, for me, sometimes the answer is just like, I don't know, take good cards.
I mean, that's what I tried it. I don't know.
Okay. Here's also, let me pitch you this.
Okay.
It doesn't feel like a core concepts applicable draft necessarily, because there are some very non-core concepts, like you need to pick a basic land sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Snowlands. Here's my pack question one, for people one. Out there. I have not taken a snowland pack one pick one yet, but like, what's the highest that you've taken a non-dual snowland?
Ooh, non-dual.
I'm just talking for sure. Snow covered island, baby.
I believe pack one pick one is an appropriate place to take a snow basic. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I do. And I know
it has to be. I mean, the rare has to be bad and the uncommons also have to be bad.
Right. They have to be like, whatever. You're not excited by them.
Yeah.
And I think it's totally defensible to take there. And that's for one reason, like the snow deck. We can talk about like deck concepts.
Already my favorite thing to draft.
The snow deck is favorite thing to draft right now. It is so cool. And the payoffs are huge.
So good.
So the thing is that everybody wants it. So you might not always get it.
Very true.
Because it's very popular.
And if you're going to get it, you need to be picking those snowlands high. And we were talking about this. You are like, hear me out, everybody. You need to play duels where you're only one of the colors.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Like, that's a thing you're going to do.
Yeah.
Not all the time. Maybe not in an aggro deck. But like, if you're trying to play a snow deck, in every snow deck, if it's like, if that duel is one of my colors, I'm like, yep, get in.
Absolutely. Because you need it for your trolls. Those trolls need 2 snow to activate.
Oh, yeah, they do.
And
those Hailstorm Valkyries.
Yeah, you got to pump that little birdie.
They need to.
You need your snows. You've got, if you want to play Icy Manipulator, congratulations, you can in this format if you're playing a snow deck. What is it called? Ice Pillar of Doom? I don't know what it is, but
I think it might just be Ice Pillar. You just added the of Doom.
Well, the first time I played against it, I had actually never seen that card. I did not know it was in the set. And then somebody played it and I was like, oh, Icy Manipulator is in this set. Well, that's a busted card, as we all know, from Dominaria.
It is quite good. oh man, the little I love all of the lands, not lands, like Frost Augur.
Oh, Frost Augur's great.
Which is the one where you like pay snow Animate. And tap. No, you're thinking of Avalanche Caller.
Oh, yeah, Avalanche Caller.
Ooh, also great.
Also great. Make a 4-4 with your snow land. The little iceberg.
Iceberg?
And loot.
There's so many cheap creatures that have a great snow activation.
Yeah. That Ice Hide, what's it called? Ice Hide Giant? Is that the name of that?
Ice Hide Troll. I have it in here. We're going to talk about it later.
Okay, we'll save it then. But yeah, the snow deck is one of the most popular decks you can draft in the format. Mm-hmm. And you can do some totally wild things with it, especially if you have the card, what am I thinking of? Path to the whatever, one in a green enchantment that allows you to play Wooburg twice and activate draw two cards, gain two life, deal two to your opponent, whatever. I'm seeing that left and right because people are want to do the most degenerate thing possible, which this card signifies. And it's just a fine card to have in your snow deck anyway because it fetches you your snows that you need. What was I going to say? Yeah, so the snow deck, number one. I think the overall consensus, at least at this point in the draft, is that the format is slow and grindy.
Yes.
However, you can get aggroed out. Aggro decks do exist, and they are extremely powerful if you can put them together correctly.
Yes.
But I would say probably the majority of the time is going to be a slower, grindier match.
Yes. I would say for the most part, like, getting aggroed out happens once in a blue moon.
Yeah. I mean,
not once in a blue moon, but like, right, if I'm playing a premium draft and I'm playing, you know, if I go 7-2, I played 9 games.
You played one aggro deck or whatever.
I got aggroed out once.
Yeah.
And then I beat at least one other aggro deck that tried to do it but couldn't get there.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, that's, I think, the fallback is if the aggro deck, it has, if you're playing against a lot of slow grindy decks, if you falter, you won't get there.
Yeah.
Whereas some formats are a little bit more forgiving to aggro decks than that. That you, if you hit the wall, oh, there's some ways around it, which there are, of course, ways around it in call time too. Yeah. But there's more setbacks to doing it. However, if you do get it, you will probably get 7 wins because you can just smash through everybody who's just messing around.
Yes. Everyone who's just messing around. Who's
just going down to Fun Town.
Although we will talk about some cards that I think put the brakes on real well.
All right. All right. Okay. And we'll talk about some aggressive cards as well if that's your jam and you want to do it. Today, actually, this morning, I got destroyed by red black aggro using Draugr's Helmet to give things menace, which was really good.
Those cards, I do like those artifacts.
Yes.
Those artifact equipments that you can pay to make the creature to put them on.
Yep.
They are, for the most part, just like quite nice.
Excellent. And like, I was being slow and derpy, and so I couldn't like get enough creatures down to block forever. And they were like, I don't care. I'm just going to play garbage off the top of my deck, and it gets +2/+2 in menace. Like,
I will also say I've really enjoyed, like, one of my other, like, a lot of my best decks have been snow.
Yeah.
I like Icebreaker Kraken is my best buddy. Keep opening that rare.
The Kraken comes for Megan.
Yes, the Kraken comes for me. I've now made it in multiple, like, gotten it in multiple drafts, and I'm just like, yeah, we're going to do this.
I haven't seen a Kraken yet.
Ooh, and I've told you this, but I had a deck. This was so degenerate, but I had Moirit of the Frost, which is the changeling that copies something, and it costs 5 mana, no matter what. Like, it's just a 5 mana spell.
Yeah.
So I would play the Kraken, you know, for 8 or whatever, 8 or 7 or 8. Something like that. Have this Kraken that taps everything down. And then you play Moirit of the Frost, copy the Kraken, and then it like taps everything down again. And then the Kraken has an ability where you can return 3 snowlands to your hand and put the Kraken back in your hand. So you do that with the copied Moirit. And then you just cast it again for 5 because you had 5 lands.
Beautiful.
It's so good.
And Kaldheim is full of these stories because of the fact that there's so many interesting, like, complicated things you can do. Like, people are like, hey, play the bounce card because what you want to do is bounce your saga before it goes to the graveyard. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? Nobody's ever, I mean, like, that's just not a thing that's been in other formats.
So cool.
Speaking of sagas, there's a billion.
My other best decks have been, I've had some really good green-black decks of all things.
Sure, yeah. Were you doing elves or were you just doing whatever?
Just doing green-black mess around.
The number one archetype.
Yes, the number one archetype of green-black mess around, man. Like, just kind of do some stuff.
Mm-hmm. Just doing, playing some creatures, cloning some stuff.
Exactly.
Value.
So should we get in here and talk about some of our overperformers?
Yeah, overperforming cards. Okay. Yeah. So
we'll start it off with white.
White, everyone's favorite color.
Everyone's thrilled about white.
What I wanted to say about this card, which is very unexciting, but whatever, is God's Hall Guardian. This is a 3/6 kitty cat with vigilance.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that we've got to say, it has Foretell on it.
Yeah.
So you can play it for 4 mana with Foretell. And Foretell as a mechanic.
Oh my God. I love
it. Go for it.
It's so good.
I was like, I'm just going to leave this space for Megan to talk about Foretell.
I love Foretell. Yeah. It's so good.
It is an excellent mechanic.
It is, like, I can't say enough good things about it. Like, I can't even properly express how much I love Foretell because I think that it is such such a smart mechanic.
And talk about explosive turns that Fortell gives you.
Exactly, right? Like, people can, you can take some time, right? Like, I think my favorite turns are ones where it's like, on two, you foretell something, you're not even going to cast it on three. Like, nope. You're not even going to cast it on four. Nope. Like, maybe on four, you foretell something else. But then you get around to, like, turn six, and you can all of a sudden just go wild.
Yeah.
I think that it is, or like times when you keep, so many times I've kept a hand with two lands and like a Sorulf's Packmate.
Yep.
Or the
great,
the blue man, the blue draw one that has foretell.
Yep.
Because they foretell for two. And so you're like, do you know what? If something really bad happens, I foretell this on two. I draw cast it on three, yep, and hopefully draw a card.
Yeah.
And draw the land that I need. It's like, oh, stuff like that. Like those ones are especially the ones that I think, to me, signal how smart it is, because you end up with fewer non-games of Magic.
Right, exactly. Which is something that they've been attempting to do with mechanics in all of their latest sets, and Fortell is a huge home run on that.
I need to take a breath, because I feel like I just talked about Fortell without breathing, because that's how much I needed to say. I was just like...
Fortell, 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 Fortell. So what we're saying is, any card with Fortell...
So good.
...is how many points better?
It's like, it just bumps it up... 3 out of 10?
I mean, seriously. It's,
honestly?
And that's what I wanted to say. This is a 3/6 with Vigilance. It normally costs 6 mana. And I'm sitting here being like, you can play this cat.
Yes.
When normally you would play be like, day, I don't want this cat. This, yes, cat is garbage. Throw in the trash, flush it down the toilet. No.
Yeah. I was skeptical when you put this on the list, but I think that you're completely right.
This is what I wanted to say about
it. Because
it takes
it from being a card that you would never play.
Never.
I will absolutely put this, yeah, in my deck.
Kitty cat. And guess what? Blocks everything for the entire existence.
Yes, for days.
That which I also wanted to put it on here to mention the fact that the 3/6 is bigger than you even need, because I think the number that is important in call time is 4.
Yes.
Which is, absolutely, the number we talk about, which if you want to kill something, if you want to be able to attack profitably, if you want to be able to block profitably, is you need to know the quote unquote magic number, which is which number will get you through. That number is 4. Just, yeah, FYI. The other white card I put on here was a Doomscar Oracle, which also, yeah, has Fortell. And it's cheap Fortell. It's 1 white mana.
Yeah.
And you also gain 2 life when you cast your second spell every turn, which, mm-hmm, if you're playing long grindy games, this will get you out of the range of aggro. And it just is like another, once again, an example of a creature that normally I'm not interested in playing, but because of Fortell, because of the cheap cost, and because it, ooh, will save me.
And when you cast this for 1 white mana, you feel so good.
You're like, 1 white mana for this friggin' 3/2?
And the thing is that, like, on turn 4, you can cast this and then immediately cast, yep, something else, and you're already, boom, gaining life.
Gain
off
2
of
life.
It.
Yep.
And it's, yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, so there you go.
It's so good. I had Starnheim Courser on,
ooh,
here.
Tell me more.
This is just the little 2 and a white for a 2/2 flying artifact and enchantment spells you cast cost 1 less to cast.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you're skeptical of a 2/2 flyer, right? Like, you like them to be 2/3s or 3/2s to maybe block a little better, mm-hmm, get through a little better. But this guy's just, like, totally serviceable. And if you're playing, like, blue-white, which has, you know, it has, like, Mists of Lit-Jara.
Sure.
And it has some sagas and stuff.
Nico's sagas. That's,
yeah,
what
Nico's
I've been calling
sagas.
Them. I don't know what they're called.
Yeah, right? Like, it just, like, the text on it is not irrelevant.
I've, number of times I've put this horse in my deck, which this is a Pegasus and not an angel, which annoys me. I did have an angel deck once, yes, and I was like, why are you a Pegasus?
Why are you just a Pegasus?
Because you don't want a 2/2 angel. Okay, hold on 1 second. You've heard me make this argument on the show before, but just in case I need to refresh your memory.
Okay.
I want to play creatures that are creature types that are normally big, like angels, like giants, and I want them to be small.
Yeah.
And I want them to just be like, have it be a baby. I don't care.
We have smaller giants this time,
yes,
around.
Yes, that makes me very happy. I was going to say that too. Like, have it be baby angel. Have it be angel in training. Have it be what? I don't care.
Yeah.
But because it's a tribal set. I want a tribal deck in standard.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get off my soapbox now.
But
Wizards,
no,
come on, man.
That's a great point.
All right, anyway.
But yeah, so usually I'd be a little skeptical, but like, you know, just play this thing. It flies.
And I've been shocked. What I was going to say, I've been shocked when I looked down at my hand and I'm like, oh yeah, now my sagas are cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a legit, it is not, I feel like there are sets where that additional text on that card doesn't really matter. You're,
yeah,
like,
for
whatever,
sure,
I'm never doesn't, casting, yeah, an artifact or an enchantment. And in this set you are.
Yeah, totally.
And then my other one was Iron Verdict.
Yeah.
This card, again, it's the foretell. You foretell it,
one
and it just
mana.
Sits there for forever until you want to cast it for 1 white white mana, and it reaches that magic number, which you're talking about is 4. It deals 5 damage to target tapped creature. It's an instant, so you don't have to be dealt damage by it. You can do it while it's attacking. You can, like, it's great. You can wait and do it on your turn, like, in case you needed to for some reason. You want to cast your second spell in a turn or something like that.
Sure.
Again, I think it's just that one white, the one white plus 5 damage just really sells me on this card.
Let me tell you how many times.
Nice little package.
I'm sure that my opponent has this card over in their foretell zone.
Yes.
And I'm like.
And you're like, ah.
Am I supposed to attack? You're just going to iron verdict me.
Yeah. And you don't want to do it. And it's annoying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Yeah. I just like it. You know, usually like that tapped, that white spell that does damage or kills a tapped creature is touch and go depending on its text.
Yeah.
And I think in this case, it's a good one.
Well, it's 5 instead of what it's normally is 4, right?
4, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Augury Raven is what I put on here for blue. Oh. Because you've got a 3/3 for 2 mana and it's a flyer.
Yes.
I think that the reason I put it on here is because normally when it reminds me of Saroth's Packmate, which is better than this. But
yeah.
Whenever I see this played against me, I'm like, ugh.
It's so annoying.
Now I have to deal with a 3/3 flyer for 2.
You have to deal with it.
Yep, I gotta kill it, I guess.
You have to.
Because what am I gonna do? In order to have a blocker to block this is gonna be until I have 4
mana.
And
they played it on turn 3, which is so rude.
Just quite annoying little bird.
Very rude. Speaking of annoying birds.
Ooh, this one for sure.
Mistwalker.
Yeah, 100%.
Love Mistwalker.
Really good. It does everything you want.
It like a 1/4 in this format? It's a big butt.
Big butt.
This is a big butted bird.
I love a bird with a big butt.
Right. There are times when, like, especially if someone's trying to aggro you out, they play one of those 2/1s, like the 2/1 dwarf that makes more dwarves as its boast.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, lol, here's a 1/4.
And then you can kill them with it as the game progresses.
Exactly. Later on, it pumps. Oh, great. And it's a shapeshifter. Like, it's just all bonus on this,
all
on this burb.
Bonus.
Unsurprisingly, I have a lot of blue cards.
I found one. Megan
found
3.
I found 3. Bergstrider. Oh, baby.
Oh, yeah. I hate this card because it's only ever played against me. I can never get in a draft.
Love me a Bergstrider. 4/4 for 4 and a blue. Snow creature, giant wizard. And if you paid snow in its mana cost, you get to tap something and it doesn't untap.
This is a Frost Lynx on steroids.
Yes. It's a 4/4, which is a big boy.
Big, beefy boy.
It's a big guy who comes down and just like, it taps no matter what, but it freeze taps if you paid snow, which hopefully if you're playing this card, you have at least some access to snow mana. And like it deals with it for 1 turn. And then you also, by the time they're ready to attack again, your mana is all untapped and you're going to have other stuff to do. Bergstrider. And then Behold the Multiverse, which is the draw spell I was talking about earlier.
Very good.
The fact that you can foretell this on 2 and then just cast it later, so you're not taking a full turn later in the game.
Yeah.
Like the fact that you don't have to spend your turn 4 casting this, you can spend part of turn 6.
Right.
Or something like that, I think just makes this, like 2 mana for this effect is so good.
Then you rebuy it with Nico's Whatever.
It's true. Nico's Whatever. Which classic is Nico's Whatever
now
target.
The name of that saga. Nico's Whatever.
It's, and it scries 2 and draws 2 cards.
Megan's so new good. Treasure cruise, everybody.
I really love Behold the Multiverse. I think it is excellent. It's really good. When my opponent casts this, I'm so sad. I'm like, no!
I wish that was me. Now, I said I would mention some aggressive cards, and here's one I wanted to point out with, I think you can probably play this in a green-black elves deck, too, and feel pretty okay with it. Death Knell Berserker, which is a 2/2. When it dies, if its power was 3 or greater, create a 2/2 black zombie berserker creature token. So a few things care about berserkers, but what I was going to say about this is it's easier than I expected for this to have greater than 2 power in your deck if you're building it right. Like you've got all of the little runes, the death touch rune or the haste rune or whatever you can put on this, or you can put the wings artifact, which I'm going to mention later for other reasons, onto this thing, and then boom, when it dies or trades in combat, you don't really care because you get it back essentially. So I just want to point out this little fellow if you want to be swinging for the fences.
Yeah. Speaking
I also,
of.
Yeah, Infernal Pet, another aggressive card that gets +1/+1 in flying when you cast your second spell every turn. So I've
You put a +1/+1 counter
yes,
on
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes. +1/+1 counter. If this was just +1/+1, I'd be kind of like, whatever. But this one is like, you have to be a little bit afraid of this. Late in the game, you don't have to be afraid of this card. But like I said, if you're playing an aggressive deck or whatever, and you want some three drops, this will get big and might kill them. And it's cute.
And it is cute and a little spooky.
Very spooky.
He eat that fairy.
He eat fairy.
Unsurprisingly, I chose some black cards that are for other decks. I think Skull Raid is excellent. You do not like Skull Raid.
I mean, I think it's fine. Okay.
You think it's fine. Maybe excellent is a step too far, but I think this card is like quite good.
Here's my problem with it is that everyone is like, this card is good. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, I will play this card. And then I play this card and I lose anyway. Aww. That's why I'm sad about it.
I think that it is, right? Like, the problem with playing stuff like Mind Rot is like, what if you draw it late and they don't even have any cards?
Right. This gets around that.
It just sucks. Yeah. And this gets around that where you draw the difference.
Yep.
Like, oh, some of the best ones are like, they discard their last card and you draw a card. So, like, that moment.
For sure.
And if it happens to you, you're just like, rip me.
Well, and I think particularly because this format is slower and bomb-oriented and whatever, Skull Raid becomes even better than it would.
Yes, and it is, like, I love that it's a legitimate decision sometimes to be like, if they've been basically playing about on curve and they only have two cards left, you're like, should I cast this right now? Because I think that I'm going to swipe two spells from their hand.
Yeah.
Should I wait a turn and just like be like, play your second to last thing and see what happens? And then like, because I really want to draw one. Oh, so good. I really like it.
Skull Raid.
Skull Raid. Wither Crown. I did not expect this card to be playable.
This card did kill me in a game. I will say that.
I did. Like, it's one in a black for an enchantment aura. Enchant creature. Enchanted creature has base power 0 and has, at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose one life unless you sacrifice this creature.
You're like, Maria, why didn't you sacrifice a creature? The answer is because I held onto that creature for a long time. Yeah. That's how it did it.
And that's the thing is, like, I really like it because a lot of the times it is just a straight up removal spell.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say like, hey, it is putting the decision in your opponent's hands.
Yep.
Right. Like they are the ones who get to decide, which you don't always want to give them the power for that. But it is like, I thought it was basically unplayable and I just stuck it in a deck where I just didn't quite have enough removal in it that I felt like. And the first time I cast it and they just like sacrificed it immediately. And I was like,
oh,
never mind. Party on, guys.
I mean, yeah. I mean, eventually they will have to if your deck is slow enough or they're going to die to it.
Like the only thing it doesn't really work on is if they have stuff that has like solid activated abilities. Like then it is a bummer, right? They're probably going to keep it around and they're going to get value off a card that you actually just wanted to hard remove.
Yeah, that's the deal what happened with me. It was on my 3/3 that you can boast to get back cards from your graveyard.
Yeah.
And so I just kept getting stuff back and left it around. But eventually I died. Story of my life, called on. I died anyway. That's the tagline.
Point is, I'm not saying it's excellent, but I think that it is like surprisingly playable.
Ooh.
This is my take on Wither Ground.
I love this next one.
Oh, Priest of the Haunted Edge. This card is so good.
That edge is haunted.
That edge is real haunted. One in a black for a snow creature, a zombie cleric, 0/4. Tap, sacrifice, Priest of the Haunted Edge. Target creature gets -X/-X until end of turn, where X is the number of snowlands you control. Activate only anytime you could activate a sorcery. Just, it kills a lot. It kills a lot.
Yeah.
It block real good.
It kill.
It block real good and then it kill.
I played against somebody who was rebuying this card.
Yep.
How do you think that made me feel?
Bad, Maria. My guess is bad.
They could -6/-6, turn and turn again. Story of my life.
It's so good.
And then
good.
I died. And then I died
and
anyway.
And then you died, right?
Yep.
Like, I've had people straight up use a card that you're about to talk about,
yep.
Demon Bolt, on this.
On this, yeah.
Because they want to get rid of it. They're like, get it out of here.
Demon Bolt, everybody. I'm sure you know by now that this is widely regarded as the best common in Kaldheim for good reason.
Yeah.
Single red mana, if you foretell it to do 4 damage, which as we said is the magic number.
Instant speed.
Kills them. I don't want to say what, 80%+ of the creatures in the set, probably more than that. Basically anything you want to call. Basically all. Foretell it, it's cheap. Very good removal. Frostbite also at common in the set, FYI.
Yeah, Frostbite was the other one I had. Yep. I will say that the only thing that makes me tentative is that I do only, like, red is
You just don't touch want to play red.
Right? Like, sometimes it's good, but sometimes it not.
Another card people have been talking about nonstop is Run Amok, which is interesting to me because this card has, you know, this in this case, it's +3/+3 for one and a red target attacking creature gains this and trample until end of turn.
Yeah.
Been talking about it as an excellent red removal spell. Well, you need to have, beware, you need to have the right kind of deck to play this. You got to be attacking or else it's not going to do anything for you ever.
Yep.
And Arena will be like, do you want to play this on your opponent's creature?
And you're like, bite me.
Frostbite me, okay, Arena? But if you are red and if you are remotely aggressive, you want to play Run Amok. It'll be very good for you.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
For sure. Green.
Yeah.
What another... Just one of the top commons.
Sorrow's Pack, mate.
So good.
Get real. This card's
so absurd.
Nutter butters.
Yes. The first time that someone foretold this and like, cast it on three, I was like, excuse
you? You're playing a 3/3 and drawing a card on turn three? On turn
three? Like, who do you think you are?
What are you, some kind of god of magic that's your turn?
This is
a classic.
What is this card? Like, you're telling me that on turn three, I can play a 3/3
what is this card?
And draw a card.
What is this card?
For two mana.
Two mana?
Two mana. So, again, you can keep a hand that has two lands in this.
Yep.
And do you know what? It's probably going to work out for you, buddy, because you got a little bit of time because you have a 3/3.
Yeah, this card is completely... I don't know.
I would put as many of these as I draft. Like if I,
there's no upper limit. No limit. Absolutely none. And I can't remember a common ever exceeding my expectations as far as Sarulf's Pac-Man.
It is so good.
Of all time.
What a jerk.
What is this card?
Unless you're the one playing it, in which case
you feel great.
A+.
I put an Horizon Seeker in here. That is 2 and a green for a 3/2 boast of 1 and a green. Search your library for a basic land card and then put it into your hand. Shuffle your library. I put this card in because it's a 2-for-1 for you. Not for your opponent. You play this card, you have a creature, it's a 3/2, you boast it. Hopefully it will get through, you keep your card, and you get a land.
Yeah. I'm a little bit lower on this than you are, I think, just because I'm not crazy about the 3/2 boast creatures for three, right?
Like, I mean, they can potentially trade with anything that your opponent has already played.
Exactly. And so. Like, I just feel, I guess that's my only thing is that, like, I feel like they are too often an easy trade for my opponent with a 2-drop even.
You will be sad.
And then you're
you
just
will
like,
also get
this
your
is a bummer.
Snowland.
That's true. That you do get your snowland.
That you need.
Yeah.
Hopefully for your troll.
Yes. Oh, speaking of, Icehide Troll.
This card's dumb.
This card causes so many problems.
Once again, I will play as many of these as I get in a draft.
Literally, this card is absurd. I have lost to this card. I have won on the back of this card.
For sure.
2 and a green for a 2/3 snow creature troll warrior. Snow, Icehide Troll gets +2/+0 and gains indestructible until end of turn. Tap it.
Remember that it taps.
It taps.
By the way.
But do you know what?
Some text I forgot today.
That's fair. It gets indestructible.
Yeah.
What a jerk move.
Yeah, this card is very, very, very difficult to deal with. Do you want to kill it? Well, you better have a way to exile it.
Do you know what? If my opponent has played two of these, I'm like, I lost this game.
I mean, it's so dumb. Like, they can block forever. They can attack forever. It does not matter. Or hopefully you have, what is it called? Way it's down, just, -3/-3.
Yes.
That's the only other way I've thought of getting around this card. Or tapping it with my Icy Manipulator. Yeah. Anyway.
I didn't put Mists of Lit-Jara on my list, but that card is a slight overperformer for me, I think. It's the -3/-0 for an enchantment.
Oh, yeah.
And it has flash.
Yep.
It's because it does deal with some stuff like this that otherwise that it's common and it can deal with other stuff at common. It's not perfect, but like
strap in.
It's going to get the job done.
If you get an Icehide Troll across from you, you're just like, buckle up, buttercup. This game's going for another 2 hours.
Yes. And there's only one way out and it's through this Icehide Troll. And it's just going to really suck for you.
That card. Speaking of snow, this card is also, card is beautiful.
This one's an uncommon in here, but it's just like, it's just quite good. And really I wanted to mention it. 3 and a green, a spirit of the Alder Guard. For an 0/4 snow creature bear spirit, when it enters the battlefield, search your library for a snow land, reveal it, put it into your hand, shuffle your library, gets +1/+0 for each other snow permanent you control. Like, it goes and gets you the land.
Yep.
It usually gets big in a snow deck.
He grow himself.
Yeah. He grow.
He fetch. What a good bear.
What a good bear. Like, just a good card.
Just a good friend.
Yeah.
I mentioned I wanted to talk about Raven's Wings because I want to give you a PSA that if you're boasting a lot in your deck, you want to play Raven's Wings. Yeah. Because how are you going to get your boast through and have it live to survive and boast again the next day? Well, it better be not blockable. And that is what Raven's Wings will do for you. They're cheap enough. They're cheap enough to equip +1/+0 and gets flying. I've definitely been Raven's Wings out of a few games. And it's just a handy little note if you're boasting that they will help you boast.
I wanted to call out my two favorite uncommon sagas so far.
Okay.
Which is Binding the Old Gods. Which is just, it's so good. It's absurd.
I had two of these in my pre-release sealed deck here when we were streaming.
This could be a rare just because the first chapter is destroy target non-land permanent opponent controls. And
I was playing this. I'm like, oh, do I even want to play this? And my chat was like, it's chapter 1 is destroy target permanent. And I was
two black and green. Yeah. Chapter 1, destroy target, non-land permanent. 2, search your library for a forest, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. 3, creatures you control gain death touch until end of turn. Like, 3 is, like, fine. Sometimes it's very good, honestly.
You can kill
sometimes it's bad.
With Fang, what's his Fang?
What's his Fang? Yeah, that's true. Old Fang Man.
Poison Fang Man.
Poison Fang Man. But it's destroy target, non-land permanent.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Great.
I love it. And then this one is a bit of a surprise, maybe.
I do like this card.
But given how good snow is, probably not. The 3 seasons. Green, blue, 1, mill 3
Don't
cards.
Don't have your press conference there. Continue.
What? Okay. 2, return up to 2 target snow permanent cards from your graveyard to your hand. 3, choose 3 cards in each graveyard. Their owners shuffle those cards into their libraries. It just says draw two. Like, the middle chapter is usually draw 2 for me.
Yeah,
like in the decks that I play this in.
If you've snowed your deck correctly, you draw 2 and bring back. If they have managed to deal with your Ice Hide Trolls,
you just they're get back. It back. It's absurd.
It's
big
a cool
fan.
Card.
Big fan of the card.
So we've got some removal spells here to talk about at the end.
That have underperformed.
I have found that, here's 2 minds about Raven Form.
Yeah.
Raven Form, I've seen a lot of people playing it. And if you're playing against a lot of people who have a lot of bombs in their deck and they're winning with bombs, which are creatures, Raven Form will deal with that thing for a little bit. But leaving behind a 1/1 flyer is not a 0 cost. And sometimes that is just good enough that it doesn't matter. Especially if you're playing with cards like the Uncommon Saga that trades creatures or whatever, you've got to be careful with a card like that. It might seem better than it is to you, especially like your new player. You're like, oh, well, I'm downgrading their sweet mythic into a 1/1 flyer. But leaving them a 1/1 flyer, beware, is a true cost to playing that card. Because sometimes a 1/1 flyer just kills you.
I will say I am on the other side of this. I like Raven Form. I think that, I guess maybe for the most part, because I don't, like, I have not died to the bird ever. which, to be fair, it's not like I play a ton of it. I'm not playing, like, multiple Raven Forms, but I usually will play, if I'm in blue, especially if I'm in, like, a Fortell style deck, where I want to be playing more Fortell cards, I will play a Raven Form. Because, like you said, there are a solid amount of cards that are just so much better than a 1/1 bird that it is, to me, leaving them the 1/1 bird is like an acceptable cost to getting rid of the excellent thing.
I will sure say in best of 3, it's a more useful tool.
Yeah. And we have, right, like Ice Hide Troll, which we were just talking about at common.
We'll deal with that.
This deals with that.
Yeah.
And like, I am way less likely to lose to that bird than I am to that Ice Hide Troll. And I guess because like, if you're in blue, right, I don't know. Maybe it's because I draft a lot of Mistwalkers, man.
Megan's deck is all 23 Mistwalkers. Let's go.
It's like 23 Mistwalkers and some Raven Forms. And you're like, yeah, baby, you can have a 1/1 bird all day.
Well, yeah, for sure. You are winning that draft.
Anyways, so like, yeah, we're of two minds.
The other card is Way Down, which this card is very interesting. It's -3/-3 for a single black mana, but an additional cost to cast this is you have to exile a creature card from your graveyard.
-3/-3 is just not enough.
Like we said, the magic number is 4 in this set, so this is not going to kill some things
sometimes
that you want to kill.
It's enough, but so often it isn't, and I want it to be an enchantment that gives it -3/-3.
Yeah, so do I. A number of times I wish it was an enchantment, and a number of times it's been a dead card in my hand because I didn't have any creatures in my yard to be able to cast it. When you can cast it, if you have a deck that's going to have high turnover of your own creatures or whatever, like your black-white semi-aggressive, that's the deck where this card, you want this card.
Yes.
But even so, there's going to be times when you can't cast it and it's going to be completely and utterly useless.
Or like you can cast it and it's just not good.
Yeah.
Like I have been... I do take it. I do play it sometimes, but it is not usually I'd be like -3/-3 for a single black. Sign me up.
Yeah, for sure.
No. This next one is uncommon. Turgrid's Shadow. 3 black/black instant. Each player sacrifices 2 creatures. Foretell for 2 black/black. You can just see it coming.
I've been surprised by this card.
You get I got surprised by it once. Never again.
Never again.
Right? Like never again. Ever since then, if your opponent is in black and they're not playing creatures, you're like, okay, well, I will just leave my board the way
me.
It is. Yeah.
Well, good thing I have that 1/1 flyer left over.
Exactly. That's very true.
But no, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I just think
what a feast or famine card for sure.
Exactly. Like, okay, if you get them, good job. You really got them. But I think that the number of times that you get someone versus the number of times this is just a dead card in your hand because like your stuff is better than theirs or you're about tied and you don't want to spend a card like just wrathing everybody essentially.
Yeah.
It's just not it.
This next card is shocking to me.
Bind the Monster.
1 single blue mana, enchant creature. When it ETBs, enchanted creature deals damage to you equal to its power. Enchanted creature does not untap during its controller's untap step. Let me tell you how many times I'm like, I can't cast this because I will die to the damage I'm going to be dealt by it.
I would say 1/2 of the time that I have this in my hand, I cannot cast it.
It's not worth the cost to me to tap the creature down to take 6 or whatever.
No.
I'm shocked that I'm saying this about this card.
Same.
Shocked.
And I will say I do still play, if I'm in blue and I don't have a lot of other removal, I will play 1 copy because the only acceptable time is to slap it on something early. Right. If they play a Sorolf's Packmate on 3 and you can bind it, you're like, OK, that's fine. I got what I needed to out of this. It'll bind it from the very beginning. But it is because you draw it later and it is quite bad.
I'm sitting here being like feeling very odd telling you that this card is a liability, but I cannot ignore the evidence of my own eyes and ears playing this card and feeling terrible.
It is not right.
Every time I have to cast it. That's not good. Who knew that the opportunity cost of playing this would be so high? I didn't. Going into the set, I was like, 1 blue mana? It in every blue deck.
But I had someone like cast like 3 of these against me and then lose.
I'm telling you, 20 life is not as much life sometimes as you think it is.
As you want it to be.
Or as you want it to be.
So those are some of our first thoughts.
Yes, early thoughts on call time. If you've got any comments you want to make about how call time draft has been for you, or tell me, Maria, exactly this is the type of deck you should draft to get your 7-1s or your 3-0, please put it in the comments because I want to know what you've been having success with, what some of your underperformers, your overperformers have been. Keep in mind, we're not talking about rares and mythics here. We're talking about more bread and butter cards. Even if this card is more of a prince format and less of a pauper format, it's still important to talk about these things.
Yeah.
Because they will be the cards you see most often coming up in your drafts.
Yeah.
Overall, call time, I'm not winning, but I'm having a huge blast playing it. Can't stop playing it, in fact.
So much fun.
Really, really fun. Can't wait to finally crack the code, if I ever do, numbers in front of my face gift. because I just want to be able to be like, have fun and also be victorious. Will it happen for me? Stay tuned.
I believe.
Well, that makes one of us. Let's talk about Ultra Pro, everybody.
Ooh, Baby, we have got some shiny new banners from Ultra
Yes,
Pro.
We have.
Look at this guy.
That's so cool.
So shiny.
Who is this, though?
Oh, I think that's Nico.
Is this Nico?
Yeah, they're standing here and they're holding
their
spear,
shards, of course.
And they have the shards.
Yeah, we've got a sweet Ultra Pro banner here, which is just gorgeous.
Yeah.
And they've upped their banner game too, I have to say. This is nicer material even than past banners that they've had.
Like, it's sleek, it's nice, it looks great.
Do you need some art for your walls, but you don't want to buy a frame or like worry about buying a frame? Guess what?
Or you don't have like, you don't want to hang heavy stuff?
Yeah, here you go. You can put this up on a little like command hook or whatever. And boom, decoration. Gorge. I've got a call time one hanging over behind my left shoulder over here. This one looks super metal and awesome. So this is a new perma set decoration because it's so cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ultra Pro sells all these cool new things with call time art. Mm-hmm. And these banners are some of them. And I know I see people posting about them all the time because they just look great.
They look so good.
Yeah. Find them anywhere that Ultra Pro products are sold at your friendly local game store, cardkingdom.com/GLHF. Anywhere you find fan magic stuff, you'll find Ultra Pro. Well, everybody, that is this episode of Good Luck High Five. Thank you so much once again for listening to our early thoughts about Call Time Draft, which has been a blast.
Yeah. Let us know. You can tweet at us at GLHFMagic or leave comments down in the comment section on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/goodluckhighfive.
Yeah.
Let us know. What are you having fun drafting? What have you had some really great success with? What is underperformed for you maybe? We want to hear it.
Yeah. In our community tab, I have a poll going right now for your most underrated card in Call Time. So go vote on that, or you can add your own in the comments if none of the ones that I posted there you think are the best one. Let me know. That's in our community section over on YouTube. And yeah, we've got just like so far to go, I feel like, in Call Time Draft.
Yeah.
So much more to talk about.
It's you know, it's a great journey. It's a great journey to be on.
Brand new cards coming into Standard now. Yeah. So we'll be talking about new Call Time Standard decks coming up. There's a spicy one out there, which you can play Eugene on turn two. So that one exists currently. But yeah, we'll get to that in the coming weeks. I'm just like so much exciting stuff coming up with this new set. Thank you all so much for listening. Head over to patreon.com/GLHF. If you want to become, GLHF Magic. If you want to become a member of the show and support us.
Yeah.
Special thanks to Card Kingdom and Ultra Pro once again for being awesome supporters of the show.
And you know, we hope you're out there having a great time too.
Yeah, absolutely. Give yourself a thumbs up, you know?